This is Ken Lubin, the host and founder of the Executive Athletes Podcast, and welcome to this week's episode. I want to thank everyone that's been listening, and thank you for the comments and feedback. They're awesome and an incredible help in this journey to making this podcast better and better each episode. Once again, this is unscripted and unedited, as I believe it's the best way to get to really know the guest. This week's guest is someone probably, I don't really have to read too much of their bio. Many people will know who he is, but he's an incredible individual, and I'm super psyched to have him on the show. And his name is Rob DeMartini. And Rob is actually just recently joined USA Cycling in February of 2019 to be at the helm of cycling in the USA. But what he's doing is bringing him with him his extensive knowledge and experience from a diverse background, as well as strong business-related experience across various industries. But Rob, more importantly, is a passionate athlete and cycling enthusiast and was drawn to the opportunity to lead USA Cycling after recognizing the potential for the organization to take on a larger leadership role in the cycling industry. But prior to that, Rob came to USA Cycling after spending 12 years as president and CEO of New Balance, where under his leadership, New Balance doubled its global annual sales to reach $4.2 billion and achieved one of the highest growth rates in the athletic footwear and apparel industry. Prior to that, he was working at Procter & Gamble, which spanned 20 years, beginning in their food and beverage division and including management roles with Gillette, North American Snacks, and Millstone Coffee. But most importantly, while at New Balance, he was named the most playful CEO. So, Rob, I appreciate you being part of this show. And how did you become named the most playful CEO?
Thanks, Ken, and thanks for having me on with you today. I appreciate the chance to chat with you. My kids have always teased me about that. They were younger when that happened. I think that was about 10 years ago, but they thought for sure that it was rigged. There's no way I could be the most fun CEO, but I told them that, it was about being involved in the business and being a participant in the business that you were in. At the time, I was doing a lot of running events with my associates to get to know them. I wasn't very talented, but I was willing to get out there and do it. And between that and some charitable work, I used to sit on the board of an organization called Kaboom, and Kaboom built playground, does still today, builds playgrounds in underprivileged neighborhoods. So it was a combination of the things I like doing and trying to have some fun while we were doing it, and also trying to give back. And because of it, I got named most playful CEO.
That's amazing. And I think that's a key, right? Like you said, you might not be the most talented athlete but you're a talented business guy, but people really appreciate that, right? Going out, like you said, running with your employees and going out and playing with them and getting them moving. What do you think, quickly step into it, but what do you think the importance of having passions outside of the office is, and helping you drive your own career?
It's something I came to learn over my career. I started, as you laid out, at Procter & Gamble right out of college, and that company has a fantastic culture, and it's very competitive, and it's about winning. But there was always this attitude that the products in the box were high quality and they were valued, but your skill wasn't, and your work wasn't really dictated by what was in the box. And, I grew up that way, thinking that was normal, and I sold lots of different products while I was at Procter & Gamble. But then when I got to New Balance, I realized that if you can get into a space where the widgets matter to you, and it doesn't matter if it's athletic, but if it's an area of significant interest, I got more out of myself. I was more committed, more determined to try to win, more interested in the storytelling that went along with the business. And at that point forward, I decided I was going to work in spaces where not only did I believe in the company and the culture, but I also believed in the space where they were. And that's served me well in 12 years at New Balance. It's part of what got me to USA Cycling.
And while at New Balance, the growth you've had is amazing. I'm from Boston. I've been around New Balance forever. My in-laws are in Maine. Obviously, a lot of New Balance shoes are built in Maine and built in America.
Yep.
And taking that business from what it was to what it is, is huge. Talk to us a little bit about that.
Well, I was, I was very fortunate on two fronts. I had ownership in the Davis family who had built a phenomenal company and a great culture built around manufacturing and making very good products. And I also had a great group of associates that worked there. When I joined the company in 2007, our volume had stagnated at about $1.5 billion, and we'd been there 5 or 6 years and hadn't found growth. And, you know, part of it was we had an older group of associates who knew the brand was great and lived off the heydays of the 90s when New Balance was hot. But then I had a whole group of younger folks that had not seen us be successful, and they didn't think we were in the same business as Nike and Adidas. And I remember taking the stage the first time I did in front of a global company and said, we're going to become the number one running brand in the world. To that older crew, they believed it because they'd been there once before, but it had been a long time. The younger crew thought I was nuts. They didn't think it was possible. And it took a long time. It took about 7 years, recently the brand has now taken back its rightful place as the number one running brand in the world. And yeah, Nike's 15, 20 times bigger than us. And Adidas was about 8 times bigger than us at the time, but we still grew faster than them. And by the time I left in 2018, we'd almost tripled to $4.2 billion.
That's amazing. No, and like you said, it's a legacy brand here in New England. And I think there's a lot of local loyalty, but being outside of New England, I'm sure it's been huge as well.
Yep. I mean, there's 5 manufacturing plants in the U.S. and 3 of them are in Maine, and the roots in New England are deep. But it's also had to become a contemporary brand. And so the international business grew dramatically. We went to almost $1 billion in China in 5 years by presenting this great American quality brand that people resonated to.
Cool. That's amazing. Talk to us about USA Cycling. Like you said, you made the move from New Balance to USA Cycling. I thought I heard you're more thinking heading towards retirement, but then you had this opportunity to come on board and really make a difference. I think, USA Cycling has been struggling a little bit, but I think having a professional like yourself to really look at it from a business perspective versus an athlete perspective, I think is huge. Or business and, or having both business and athlete perspective, right? You're still an athlete, you're a cyclist.
Yep.
You really understand that piece of the business as well. Talk to us about USA Cycling. And we all know cycling has been up and down and all over the place with the rise and fall of Lance and the doping scandals and everything else. And it's sort of a crazy world that you were thrown into.
Well, as background, it's one of those things that, you and I were chatting before we started recording about just the importance of connections. And it was not something I paid much attention to when I was younger in my career. I thought I could kind of do everything myself and the connections were not that important. And then you get a little bit older and you realize everything's driven by connections and relationships. And I had stepped down at the end of 2018, and my wife and I moved from Boston to Park City, where we had a vacation home. And I was going to do kind of not nothing, but not much. And I didn't have any plan. The USA Cycling thing had not surfaced. And I got a phone call from a recruiter that I think a lot of. And he was calling me looking for leads to lead USA Cycling. And I said, he said, do you know anybody? And I said, call me back in a week. And I might, because I knew I was getting ready to announce my stepping down at New Balance and putting Joe Preston in as the CEO. And I knew that if I did anything right away, I was going to need to be really different. New Balance was such a special opportunity, and I had so much fun doing it. And, I didn't want to try to duplicate it. I didn't think I could, quite frankly. So I said, I want to try something completely different. And for a decade while I was at New Balance, we were a sponsor of the Slipstream organization, which today is the EF team out of Boston. Used to be the Garmin team. So I'd gotten familiar with road cycling. We'd been to the Tour de France, and I was a weekend cyclist, although again, like my running, not very talented. And I liked it. And I started to learn about USA Cycling and what they did and what they could do. And I saw a real opportunity. And, the timing of this is great because we're just about to launch a brand new membership proposition. The business side or the commercial side of USA Cycling today is broken. Racing is a very expensive sport, and it's a very regulated sport. And because of it, today we only invite members who are racers. And that's such a small community, Ken. There's so many more riders, enthusiasts, and fans who would like to belong and support, and in some cases participate, But we had to completely change the business model. That's what we're getting ready to launch just in a matter of weeks.
And talk to us about that, right? And yeah, you know, I've been a member of USA Cycling for 100 years, and you work up through the ranks of, you know, Cat 5 to Cat 1, and both on the mountain bike side and BMX side as well, and track side, right? And like you said, it was always focused on racing. How are you going to expand it into sort of the non-racing community?
It's a good question and a hard challenge, but we think we have we've got a start to it. I don't want to overpromise here, but so just as quick background, today the only real reason to be a member is to get access to a racing license, which gives you access to about 2,400 events in this country. And I would position it a little bit like if, you know, the Department of Motor Vehicles gives you access to drive a car, or the wildlife organization, you know, governmental wildlife organizations give you access to hunt or fish. And when you think about those organizations, they don't really pull out a lot of emotion from it. You don't think about them as being a community you want to belong to. But that's what we did. We issued licenses and governed the sports we oversaw. But there's so many other people who ride but don't race, or race but do it unofficially, whether it's a gravel event, whether it's a road event, whether it's a mountain bike event. And we want them to be members. We want them to know that their dollars help support the infrastructure in this country for youth development, the infrastructure to put on rides and races all over the country, and to ensure that they're safe, fun, measured, and equitable. That's the language we've come to, that we want anytime you see our logo, we want it to connote safety, fun, measured, and equitable. And, you know, right now we've got to try to bring those brand pillars to life in the in those 2,400 events. Our new membership program will be less expensive than it was in the past, and all memberships will come with race and ride access. And to get to your question, how do we expand to people who don't race? Is a lot of people do event rides, whether they're 50-mile rides or century rides or mountain bike events. And we want to make sure that your membership delivers a set of benefits when you show up at that ride, whether it's a sanctioned event or not, whether it's a race or just a fun ride. Being a member of USA Cycling should get you registration benefits, participation benefits, and make the experience better. And we're working with the event community today to make sure that that happens.
Here in New England, as we all know, and I think it's happening out west more and more, and actually in the Midwest, I think really spawned a lot of this, is the whole gravel ride world, right? And I think what we're seeing is that's a huge opportunity for you guys, number one. But number two, you know, where do you see the future of cycling in the U.S., right? Is it racing? Is it gravel? Is it e-bikes? Is it, you know, what's the direction? And where do you see, you know, from an industry perspective, number one, I'm sure, you know, you look at it as an industry perspective, but number two, where is the future of cycling going?
Well, I think that's up to us. It's up to, and I mean the broadest us, not just USA Cycling. It's up, you know, there's some fantastic organizations in this ecosystem that we want to work with. NYCA, I know recently you did a video or you did a podcast with Steve Matus. You know, it's got 23,000 kids, I think is the number right now. It's a fantastic entry point for talent in this country to both compete at high levels, but also just to be good people, to be good, become good citizens. In some ways, it's the Boy and Girl Scouts, and what Little League did in my generation is now being done by organizations like NYCA. They're doing a fantastic job of growing young adults, and some of them go on to become Olympic hopefuls, whether it's Kate Courtney, who we have high hopes for in Tokyo, or Quinn Simmons. They come out of that organization. Cycling historically has never had an infrastructure to get youth in, unlike swimming, unlike soccer. And so because of it, it's a bit more of an adult sport and people come to it later in life, but a lot of people never get the chance to come. So we want to invest in youth. We want to invest in the youth programs and put membership dollars back to work to get kids on bikes. And if the pie gets bigger, our ultimate job of sending the best American team to world championships and the Olympics will get easier because talent will rise up. And in this country, we win a medal, an Olympic medal, for one out of every 27.5 million Americans. There are countries that do much better than that because they've got better infrastructure. There's no reason why America can't be as good at cycling as it is at swimming, where they win almost 50% of the medals.
It definitely should be, right? And the opportunities to do it here are amazing, with roads, with access to, you know, like you said, you have 2,400 events right now. And I think it's really just getting those words out. I know my daughter just signed up for the New England, you know, High School Racing Association, but they actually started grade five. And that's getting a whole new realm of people out on bikes, right? It's getting them excited. It's getting them in the woods. It's getting them just, you know, here, let's go try this, right? Versus, like you were saying, you know, what we grew up with baseball and Boy Scouts and everything. I think it's a huge opportunity there that can continue to grow. And everyone who's listened to here is, my background is bike racing and ski racing. And I think ski racing's doing the same thing now, right? They have to understand that it just can't be a racing world. It's got to get outside of that in order to bring the talent in, because we have some of the best hills or roads or facilities in the world. And why aren't we owning these competitions, both, you know, nationally as well as globally?
I think that's right. And, you know, we've been headed in the right direction. You mentioned the challenges that the sport faced a number of years ago. We're past that. These are the most tested and verified athletes in the world. And, you know, the sport is clean today and competing. And that's why you're seeing the talent that I've spoken about rise up. And, you know, we're headed into Tokyo, where we expect to do better than America's ever done in the cycling events. We compete almost every day of the Olympics, and we are hoping to surpass all historical medal counts from the U.S. performance from past games.
Now, how is, you know, the training facilities? It's in Colorado Springs, correct? Where USA Cycling's headquartered?
The Olympic Training Center is here, where our athletes train. There's a velodrome here where our coaches are working with athletes in the track, on the track all the time. And then on top of that, just because we're at altitude, an awful lot of athletes come to Colorado Springs just to train on the roads and on the trails.
Wow. That's an opportunity in itself right there. I don't even think any governing body outside the U.S. actually has facilities like that, right? With built-in altitude training. I think most of the world, and the crazy thing is, the world's best all come here to train. So why aren't we the world's best?
Well, I think we can be. And I know at our shop, we've got a group of elite coaches that are working with talent when it comes up to us through the youth organizations, and they're doing their best to let these kids' dreams come true. And that, to me, is the coolest part of my job. You get to see these athletes who have totally committed themselves to accomplish great things, and you know, oftentimes it happens. It's very cool to see.
Let's step back to your New Balance days, and I think you may have mentioned it even prior to that, but I'm sure it's Cycling USA. It's really not an issue. But what do you think of the importance of health and wellness in the workplace? Right, I think, you know, there's so many organizations that just try to grind people and get every cent out of them, or, you know, you're only here to produce for the organization. But, you know, we all know that sets in burnout and that sets in bad mojo within the organization. What's your feeling about, you know, the importance of health and wellness in, you know, a $4.2 billion organization, or, you know, the mom and pop $5 million shop?
You know, I just have become a believer that it's critical. And when I was younger, I was a workout hard on the weekends and do nothing during the week because you're too busy with work. And when I got to New Balance, we didn't have a culture where running was as prominent as it had been and where it should be for a running company. And so we made a number of kind of some official and some unofficial changes in practices where it was okay to go out and run at lunch or quite frankly, anytime during the day, if you got your work done. And we had a lot of people participating in events. And in some cases we did some of the, actually up in your neck of the woods, I two or three times did Reach the Beach, which became a Ragnar event, but it was a 12 person, 200 mile relay. And, you know, part of it is the health and your mental kind of ability to think clearly and process, but it's also connecting with each other and doing something that wasn't you know, a PowerPoint driven meeting. And, you know, to me, the healthiest organizations I've been around and the ones I want to try to create are where there's a reasonable balance. You ask a lot of people today, but you also let them do it to some degree on their terms and then make sure that they're as active as they can be. And luckily at USA Cycling, we have a lot of people that ride to work every day, and they either were competitive athletes or still are. And it, you know, infusing that into being part of what we do every day is one of the benefits of working in a space like that.
No, and as I interview more and more people here, and that is becoming, it's almost becoming a cultural shift, right? And even some of the banks in New York City,
I hope so.
Yeah, or even going down that road. I had a fellow on here, Dave Maloney, who runs this thing called the Decathlon. It's an event that would always had Wall Street's fittest CEO, and then turned into other events. And I think, you know, as one generation's moving out and the next generation's moving in, that's becoming more and more prevalent, right? And I think there's what I'm chatting with other leaders is it's sort of the wonder drug that does wonders, but it isn't a drug. They're getting the ability to get more out of people because they are healthier and, you know, and more wellness focused versus drinking coffee and cigarettes and, you know, down in Red Bulls in order to get stuff done.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think that, you know, the young worker today, the young associate, it won't even put up with that. I mean, the environment they work in, the attitude of the culture, the willingness to realize they have lives outside of work, it's a requirement, or you just can't get the best talent. And, you know, everybody's kind of wired differently. It doesn't always have to be athletic, but there's so much pressure on all of us that is making us less mobile than we used to be. And it all triggers from that handheld device that we're talking on. We got to do everything we can to keep people moving.
Right. And try to get it out of their hands somehow. I don't know how. I think that's the drug that's taken more people out than any drugs are. It's that stupid thing in your pocket when they said, what was it? Our teachers, when we were kids, would say, you're never going to have a calculator in your pocket. Well, someone proved that one wrong. when you had to learn math. But talk to us about some of your own passions. I know you're a cyclist, you're a skier, you mentioned some great powder days out in Park City, you know, and I think, you know, everyone loves to hear of CEOs who are still getting after it. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I was an average athlete in high school and college and played all, you know, traditional sports. And then as I started my kind of adult life and work life, I started running. I started skiing quite a bit. And to me, today I ski and bike one type or another. Still trying to learn. So I do a lot of backcountry skiing. I do a lot of skinning, but I still love just a great powder day. That's why we live in Park City. And I'm feeling good about this year. I just crossed 20 days on the mountain yesterday. So I should be able to get to 40 this year, which will be a record for me. But I also like to get out and ride my bike quite a bit. I didn't come to cycling until it was really two things. As I aged, I started running, got a little bit harder just to stay after it as much. And I started cycling. And I mentioned that I went to the EF. At the time, it was the Garmin team. I went to the tour and saw what unbelievable athletes these were. And I really became a fan, and that got me riding more. And I'm still learning. Last month in Tacoma, I did my first ever cyclocross event at the national championships. There was a industry race in the morning for the old guys, and it was a blast. I'd never done it before, and had an absolute. I definitely want to do it again. It was fun. So I do like learning new sports.
And cyclists are, as you saw, I'm sure, over the tour and being around it, are some of the toughest people out there, right? Yeah, you know, they crash, their clothes are hanging off them, but all they want to do is get back on their bike and go out and try to crush it.
Yeah, I mean, people, people don't realize just what incredible specimens they are and how hard they work and how much they can ask of their bodies and their minds. And they're really, whether it's mountain biking or track cycling or cyclocross or road cycling. And today, a lot of those best athletes are going to gravel. We talked about gravel earlier. They're finding it exciting and fun, and they like the vibe, and we want to support it any way we can.
No, I was just reading more and more athletes. I heard one or two last year, but a lot more this year are going over to become pro gravel racers. There's a fellow up here in Vermont, I'm sure you probably know him, Peter Vollers, who's running the Vermont Overland race that sold out the other day in like 4 minutes. And it's unbelievable to see these gravel events. It's what's happening. But more importantly is the caliber of people that are coming there. And I think cycling is one of the few sports where you're going to go out and toe the line with some of the best in the world to someone who's just going for a cruise, right? And everyone's just sort of in this cool mojo of, hey, let's go ride the gravel roads of Vermont or Park City or wherever. But they're treated the same ways as the pros. And I think that's what's sort of exciting about the sport that a lot of people don't understand. You're not going to go get to hang out with David Ortiz at Fenway, right? But you can go ride with any of the top pros here in the U.S. and be in the same event and actually be able to compare yourself against those guys.
I think that's the magic that gravel has right now. I do know Peter Vollers, at least by phone, he and I have spoken, and another Vermont team, Ted and Laura King, were with us down in Northwest Arkansas last Monday, and we had gathered 9 or 10 of the best premier gravel events to listen to them and look for areas of how USA Cycling may help them. There's a big fear that we're going to come in and regulate it, and that is not my intention at all. What I want to do is contribute to it and get more people, and particularly more youth and more women and more people of color out riding. And but Ted and Laura have an event called Rooted. The guys from SBT and Steamboat were there. The Dirty Kansas team was there. The Belgian Waffle Ride in San Diego was there, and then the Mid-South Ride from Stillwater, Oklahoma. And these events are selling out in minutes. You mentioned it. And it's popular. It's fun. It's bringing people attention back to the sport. And at USA Cycling, we are not going to regulate it, but we are going to figure out how to try to support it.
No, I think that's important, right? I think so many of the road events are just turning into, criterium, office park criterium things, right? That are just, not as engaging, not as fun. But this whole, gravel thing, and like you're saying with the Nika kids getting into mountain biking and actually competing at that level, or not competing, but just getting out there and actually having some fun and riding through the woods, is it's freeing. It allows them to see parts of the world that they would never see, that you drive by in a school bus, but never wondered what's over that hill or in that trail that's there. And I think that's, bikes can take you places a lot like skis that you never knew existed, and opens up a whole new world.
That's exactly right. And we spent a lot of time kind of rolling over those words I gave you earlier: safe, fun, measured, and equitable. That's what we want cycling to be, and we want people to have access to it. And if they want to commit their lives to it and try to get to the Olympics, that's great. And if they just want to ride with their friends on Saturday afternoon and go back to their daily life, we want to support that too. If we make the pie bigger, cycling will be healthy. This is one of the most approachable Olympic sports there are. I'm not going to get on a balance beam anytime soon, so my gymnastics career is long over, but I can still go out at 58 and have fun and get to ride with people who are at the top of the game and people who are just getting started. And there aren't many sports that can be that community centric and community minded. And that's what we want to build USA Cycling into support.
No, most people have bikes in their garage, and all you got to do is just dust them off and start with 1 mile at a time. You never know where that mile turns into 2, which turns into 5, that turns into 20, that turns into 200, right? It's all the same. And I think, there's sort of this thinking that you need these crazy great bikes to go out there and make this happen. And the funny thing is, I just bought my two kids new mountain bikes last year, and they weren't that expensive, but I can tell you, they were way better than the free ones I was getting from, Gary Fisher 10 years ago, and that were top of the line back then. And now these guys are, and that 10 years ago, 20 years ago, but the kids are on the same or better technology than we were racing at a super high level on. So it's not, the barrier of entry really, it has come down significantly as well.
It has. I mean, mountain bikes and road bikes can still be very expensive. And when I stepped down from New Balance, I also, when in my spare time, I bought a bike shop in Park City. So I own one there. And the technology is incredible, but we're working hard to make sure we've got less expensive options so kids can start wherever they want to start. And if they want to advance in both technology and in investment, they can. But that shouldn't be a barrier that keeps people out of the sport.
No, exactly. Exactly. Well, Rob, this was unbelievable. I appreciate your time today. We're coming up over on a half an hour here. You're doing some amazing things with USA Cycling. Tell the listeners where they can reach out to you, or if they have any questions or want to check out more about USA Cycling.
Well, they can just go to usacycling.org, and you can find out about membership. You can find out about racing and events, and you can find out about or prospects for Tokyo. And depending on when the podcast gets out, we're just a week or two away from a big revamp in our membership that will lower the price, broaden the reach, make it easier for kids to get into the sport, whether they want to ride or race, and also a big family component will be part of it. So Ken, you'll be able to join, and your family will get in free with you, and those are all the details that are going to be released shortly.
No, that's super exciting. I think that's the importance of it. And like you said, it's here, let's get back to the community world of riding your bike versus, you know, just the elite $15,000 bike world of riding your bike. I think you're doing some great stuff.
All right, Ken. Well, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it, and keep up the great work.
And Rob, I really appreciate it as well. And if anyone has any questions, comments, feedback, concerns, feel free to reach out to me at kenandexecutiveathletes.com. But make sure you get out there and ride your bike, or if you're in the snowy winter states, get out there and make some turns, or you can do both to get fit by skinning and going uphill and then get the ski down. So I think that's becoming a new hot thing as well. So Rob, again, appreciate it. This was awesome, and keep up the good work.
Okay, take care.